Today's episode is brought to you by Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast. When you think about the future, what kind of technology do you envision? Whatever the future holds, artificial intelligence will undoubtedly be at the heart of it all. Join Graham Klass as he hosts Season 2 of Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast, and hear from the minds transforming healthcare, retail, entertainment, personal computing, and more with the help of AI. Tune in every other Tuesday and explore the latest technology that's changing our world today and creating a more accessible tomorrow. Listen to Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast, on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey, girlfriends, it's me, Carol Fisher, back with another season of the global number one podcast, The Girlfriends. Last time, we investigated the murder of Gail Katz. This time, we're uncovering the identity of the woman who was buried in Gail's grave for a decade before she disappeared. Join me and the rest of the club as we tell her story. Listen to Season 2 of The Girlfriends, Our Lost Sister, on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
The Black Effect presents Family Therapy, and I'm your host, Elliot Connie. Jay is the woman in this dynamic who is currently co-parenting two young boys with her former partner, David.
David, he is a leader. He just don't want to leave me.
Well, how do you lead a woman? How do you lead in a relationship? Like, what's the blueprint?
David, you just asked the most important question. Listen to Family Therapy on the Black Effect Podcast Network, iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Jon Stewart is back in the host chair at The Daily Show, which means he's also back in our ears on The Daily Show Ears Edition podcast. Join late night legend Jon Stewart and the best news team for today's biggest headlines, exclusive extended interviews, and more. Now this is a second term we can all get behind. Listen to The Daily Show Ears Edition on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome to Stuff to Blow Your Mind from HowStuffWorks.com.
Hey, welcome to Stuff to Blow Your Mind. My name is Robert Lamb.
And I'm Joe McCormick.
Joe and I recently had the chance to talk with Nelson Dellis. He is a memory champion.
A memory athlete, as some might say.
Yes, some would even say a mental athlete. Though when we chatted with him, he did mention that he doesn't like to use that terminology because if he goes out to the UK, that makes him sound like he's
got a problem.
But no, this guy is one of the leading memory athletes in the world. He uses the method of Loci, the Memory Palace, which is this fabulous device that allows you to use spatial memory to catalog at times just obscure facts or even just useless data.
It's really one of the great mental technologies that I've ever encountered. I haven't used it much, but I think it's very interesting, and I'd like to give it an exploration sometime soon.
Yeah, it's fascinating stuff. So, we recently chatted with Nelson, and we're going to air that interview, but first, we thought it would be helpful to go ahead and re-air some previous Stuff to Blow Your Mind content about the Memory Palace, about the method of Loci, how it works, where it comes from, and then we'll talk to the expert himself to get some inside information.
So without any further ado, here is Robert and Julie's excellent old discussion of the Memory Palace.
Julie, I don't have the best memory in the world. Maybe it's an average memory. I'm not saying I have problems with my brain or anything, but I often forget that. I think everybody has this, where the really boring stuff you need to remember sometimes, you don't remember. I can have a simple list to go to the grocery with, and if I don't have it written like in the notes section of my iPhone, then I'm not going to remember everything, even if it's something vital, like the thing that I need to eat that night, an important component in the meal. I still will forget to pick it up.
I'm sorry, what were you just saying?
Now, that's just...
You know I have a horrible memory. I read something in our research that compared memory to a Wikipedia entry.
Really?
Yeah, and they were saying it's your memory is constantly being altered and augmented and then sometimes pared away.
Yeah, and sometimes the stuff that it's being updated with is completely not true.
It's horse manure sometimes, turns out.
Yeah.
And that's not necessarily what we're going to talk about today, but you had actually talked to me about that before, and I thought it was fascinating. Weren't you saying that when you have a memory, each time you bring it up, you're revising it in some way?
Oh, yeah, yeah. We'll definitely have to cover that in an upcoming episode in more detail. But yeah, every time you bring up a memory, you're not just removing it pristine from the vault and then returning it pristine to the vault, but you're updating it each time because your brain needs updated information.
Right.
Because we live in a world, as we discussed in our math podcast, we live in a world and have to navigate a world of multiple movable objects and symbols. So we have to be able to fly with that.
Yep, and then hence the horse manure sometimes, right?
Right.
Right.
So people have had horrible memories for as long as we've had to remember things because just as math, as we discussed in the math podcast, we develop mathematics to do the things that we're not naturally inclined to be able to do with our normal mental faculties.
Right.
We have to develop systems.
But what to do if you're in the Roman Empire, for instance, just hanging out? And you don't necessarily have a ton of books around you or your iPhone there.
Yep. Well, in this case, you turn to something called the Memory Palace, also known as the Method of Loki, right?
That's right.
Yep. And the origins of this go back to a particular back to the 5th century B.C. and a Greek poet by the name of Simonides of Ceos. And he was attending a party, you know, in the dining hall, having fun, around a table with a bunch of buddies, and he walked out for a few minutes, and the whole entire place collapsed behind him.
Oh, he walked out. I wondered how he survived. Okay.
Yeah, I maybe went out for smoke or something.
Sure.
Know.
Yeah.
But he went outside, and everything collapsed. He survives. Everybody else is just crushed to just mush, just a smucker's jam.
Yeah.
There's no identifying these people, but he was
smucker's jam.
With a name like Smuckers. So he goes back in. Oh, he doesn't go back in, but they dig everything up. Again, Smuckers jam everywhere. And they're like, all right, who were each of these people? And he says, well, let me think about it. And he's able to identify each puddle he's able to...
Grape Concord.
Yeah.
That was.
Yeah, he's able to identify them based on their seating position at the table.
Mm-hmm.
He's able to remember where they were spatially.
Okay.
And therefore remember who they were and identify these remains.
And this was a big moment for him, right?
Yeah, because then he realized, hey, I could apply this to other things in my life. If I have a list I need to remember, if there's a long list of facts I need to get down, this is how I could do it. And so this survived for ages, for centuries and centuries and on up through today.
Mm-hmm.
One big proponent of this was Dominican monk Giordano Bruno, who he was burned at the stake in 1600 for heresy. But it wasn't the memory palace method that got him there, though I think some people found it kind of creepy. But his whole thing had to do with he believed that God was present in nature and that the universe and life was infinite, therefore that, you know, there might be aliens or something. And so
that got him into the hot water.
Yeah, the Roman Catholic Church wasn't big on that at the time, though today they have a statue where he was burned, and he's more revered these days.
No, that's nice. You know, at least later on.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So the idea here, if you want to look at like just sort of a simple version, is you take these mundane facts,
mm-hmm.
and you position them in a spatial framework.
Okay.
And you make,
I'm with you.
And you make them interesting. All right.
So the idea of the memory palace is to create a mental house.
Right.
In which to house and organize symbolic images,
mm-hmm.
which then could serve as a cue for information retrieval, right?
Right. Like, for instance, our good friend Simonides here could easily populate this banquet table with a list of addresses he needs to remember. If he can come up with a unique way to remember each one and then remember them in order based on where they are at the table.
Okay. And just a little side fact to Thomas Harris's novel, Hannibal. Actually, Hannibal Lecter uses memory palaces for his patients' records.
Oh, does he?
Yeah, he does.
I've forgotten about that. I read that ages ago.
Yeah, he even includes music, too, for the rooms that he's going into.
Oh, wow. Well, hey, if it's good enough for Hannibal Lecter, you know, it's good enough for me, which is why I actually tried this out yesterday.
Okay.
And I'm going to repeat everything that I imagined, the way I built and populated my memory palace so that I could remember a list of five things to get from the grocery store on the way home.
Okay. You didn't write a thing down.
No, did not write a thing down. I didn't put anything in my phone. And so these were the things. It was soy creamer, Engelhoffer's mustard, ant traps, frozen fruit, and toilet paper. So, you know, just a standard run for me.
All right. What does your memory palace look like?
Okay.
Walk us through it.
So I decided to, for the space, I decided to use the space that I'm occupying right now, the How Stuff Works podcast room / podcast chamber.
Okay.
Okay. So this is the way I pictured it. All right. Over here behind you is our sound booth.
Mm-hmm.
And inside it, I pictured a robot cow drinking coffee for my soy milk.
Okay.
All right. And then seated where you are, you're, mm-hmm. you're not here, but instead there's a large German man, in a lederhosen, mm-hmm. With a big, mustache going on. Mm-hmm. And he's got big clumps of spicy hot mustard in his mustache.
Mm.
And that's the Engelhofer's mustache, because it has a little German man on the label.
Yeah.
Then in this seat, between us, because the table that we record at has a third chair that is never occupied by an actual person. But in my memory palace, it is occupied by a large pile, like a human-sized pile of frozen fruit. And it's just gleaming in the light, smelting a little bit, smelling sweet. And you know, I can see strawberry and mango and all. And because this is an important part of the memory palace, to add some details to it, you know. You're not just thinking the word, you know, you're not just thinking the word frozen fruit. You're picturing it.
Right.
It is existing in space and not just a concept.
Okay.
All right. And then if I were to poke my head out through these curtains where Jerry is sitting, our producer, I would see a giant ant. And that ant is dressed in Maria Von Trapp's dress from The Sound of Music, because I need to remember ant traps.
Wow.
Yeah. And then the fifth item, standing at the green screen behind Jerry's seat, there is a toilet paper mummy going through a number of sexy poses for the camera.
They're sexy poses?
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah. So anyway, it worked. I was able to remember, I know, only five things. It's kind of puny. But I was able to remember these five things. Now, you can also say that, well, I was doing this for the podcast. I was applying more thought to this than I would normally apply to the list that of things I need to pick up. And it's also worth noting that even though this is an abbreviated version, mm-hmm. one can use, people use this for hundreds of items.
Right. And in fact, in each room, you could have, I don't know, 5-10 different items mm-hmm. that are living there. It's just a matter of placing the object, right?
Yeah. Well, how about you? Do you have a memory palace you've constructed
I
for
do.
Us?
And I'm not going to actually share it. Cause I don't think I'll share one on my list. And, basically I need to mail my FSA reimbursement, right?
Okay.
Flexible spending account. So at my front door, I just pictured angry cherubs with wings made out of dollar bills greeting me at the front door with a pile of mail.
Oh, well, that's good.
Right. Like, you know, and they're angry because they're like, yeah. If you don't send this stuff in, my wings are going to fall off or whatever. I don't know. But I do have other rooms. But just for brevity's sake, I won't tell. But what I love about this is that it quickly becomes very similar to the surrealism that, I don't know about you, but for me, that I experience in my dreams.
Yeah, yeah.
Right? Like, all of a sudden, there's these incongruent things going on, and they're wild, and they're fantastic. And that's, I think, why we remember our dreams sometimes, right? Because they're so extraordinary.
Yeah, we
to
were.
To us, at least.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, we were talking about this, how we take something mundane, and we turn it into something crazy and memorable.
Mm-hmm.
In the same way that on this trip from New York, we both just came back from attending the World Science Festival in New York City.
Woot woot, by the way.
Yeah, 2011. It's going to be back in 2012. Highly recommend anybody who's big into science and lives in New York to give it a go.
Mm-hmm.
And then that's actually where I attended I was in the audience for a panel on memory, and mm-hmm. that's where I got really excited about the concept of the memory palace. But while I was waiting to go into one of these events, my wife and I were waiting out in this little courtyard area, and we saw this man walk up with a box, a cardboard box under his arm that said trout on the side. Like, I don't know, like a beer cart, like a box that like beer would come in or something.
Right.
But it just said trout. I don't know what the brand was. But anyway, he's standing there, puts his box down on the ground, and he gets a handful of bread or crackers out, and he starts feeding the pigeons. Which I don't think is technically illegal, but he's doing it anyway. So he's feeding the pigeons, three of them land there, and they're just standing there eating, and then slowly he starts raising his hand up, moving his hand forward, and then he reaches down, snatches one of the pigeons, stuffs it into the cardboard box, and then walks off with the cardboard box full of a pigeon.
And so you told me that, and I don't think I'll ever be able to look at a pigeon without thinking of that poor pigeon's fate.
Yeah.
Or wondering, again, why the side of the cooler said trout.
Yeah. Yeah. So that it's, Yeah, I have no idea what he was doing with it, what the purpose was, if he was an official pigeon catcher, if he was going to eat it for dinner. Who knows? But it was memorable because it was so weird.
Yeah.
And so the memory palace is kind of like, let's make the mundane fact. Let's make the soy creamer that I will inevitably forget. Let's make that into something memorable so that I can't forget it, at least for a short term.
Right, right.
And then you can use this memory palace, and you can populate it with hundreds of items. So you can remember a list in order of hundreds of items.
And that's what mental athletes do. They're called mental athletes.
Yeah.
And we'll get to them in a bit.
After this quick break.
Yeah.
Shout out to Astapro for sponsoring this episode and providing us with free samples.
Rob, as the local host with allergies here, they sent you some of their nasal spray to treat your allergies. What was your experience like?
Yeah, that's right. I always wrestle with the pollen a bit when it rolls in during the spring. So they sent me the little nasal spray. I tried out the product and yeah, it sure did help me get on top of my symptoms for the day. And it's so fast acting, it was already kicking in before I left the house.
Astapro is a first-of-its-kind nasal allergy spray. It's the fastest 24-hour over-the-counter allergy spray. It starts working in 30 minutes, while other allergy sprays take hours. Astapro is the first and only 24-hour steroid-free allergy spray. Astapro delivers full prescription-strength indoor and outdoor allergy relief from nasal congestion, runny and itchy nose, and sneezing.
Get fast-acting nasal allergy symptom relief with Astapro. Go to astaproallergy.com for a discount so you can get Astapro and go today. Astepro allergy.com. Astapro and go. Use as directed for relief of nasal congestion, runny nose, sneezing, and itchy nose due to allergies.
Hey, girlfriends, it's me, Carol Fisher. I'm so excited to tell you about the brand new series of The Girlfriends. In season one, we told you about the murder of Gail Katz at the hands of my ex-boyfriend, Bob. At one point, a woman's torso washed up on Staten Island and was misidentified as Gail. She spent 9 years in Gail's grave, and then she just disappeared.
It's almost like it's become this moral obligation to find her.
And that's what we're going to do. Find this missing girlfriend and tell her story. With the help of some of your favorite girlfriends from season one, like my producer, Anna.
Oh, my God.
My friend, Dr. Mindy Shapiro.
Hi, it's Dr. Shapiro, and I'd like to speak with the deputy medical examiner.
And, of course, Gail's sister, Elaine Katz.
Having no closure, it kills you.
Join us as we try to solve a 35-year-old cold case. It's not going to be easy, but it's going to be one hell of a ride.
What?
I can't believe this.
Listen to season two of The Girlfriends, Our Lost Sister on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Bring a little optimism into your life with The Bright Side, a new kind of daily podcast from Hello Sunshine, hosted by me, Danielle Robey.
And me, Simone Boyce. Every weekday, we're bringing you conversations about culture, the latest trends, inspiration, and so much more.
Thank you for taking the light, and you're going to shine it all over the world, and it makes me really happy.
I never imagined that I would get the chance to carry this honor and help be a part of this legacy.
Listen to The Bright Side on America's number one podcast network, iHeart. Open your free iHeart app and search The Bright Side.
Hey there, I'm Dr. Maya Shunker, and I'm a scientist who studies human behavior. Many of us have experienced a moment in our lives that changes everything. A moment that instantly divides our life into a before and an after. On my podcast, A Slight Change of Plans, I talk to people about navigating these very moments.
The last couple of years has been the hardest season of our marriage for sure. I'm surprised our marriage survived it. I think we both are. I think we both were barely holding on. Mm. Nothing compares to how hard this is.
Their stories are full of candor, awe, and hard-won wisdom. And you'll hear from scientists who teach us how we can be more resilient in the face of change.
True behavior change is really identity change. Every action you take is a vote for the type of person you wish to become.
Listen to A Slight Change of Plans on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
And we're back. Do you remember what we were talking about, everyone? Memory Palace.
Something about robotic cows.
No, yeah. Well, that was part of it. That was how we remembered the soy family.
Yeah, well, let's just walk through this really quickly, just like sort of four easy steps on how you can create your own memory palace.
Okay.
So we've already talked about the first step, which is create a physical location that you can clearly visualize.
It's, right. You need that's why I went with the podcast chamber for me, because I see it all the time. I'm very familiar with the locations, and I can imagine it instantly.
Right. And you can make up your own palace, you know, just as long as you can get a clear beat on the detail of it.
Like, might I recommend, like, maybe the command deck from one of the Star Trek shows? That would be a good
There place, you go. That's a good example. And step two is to establish a memory route through the location.
Right.
So if you're going to use, say, your childhood home, then you want to go through the front door and, you know, pick a route that, say, you go left to the kitchen and then down the hallway or so on and so forth. You want to keep that same route all the time. Am I right about that?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, Joshua Foer, who wrote a book about all this called Moonwalking with Einstein, he actually did a short video for the World Science Festival, and it was shown during this memory panel that I attended, and he actually did it in a garden, wasn't really a garden, it was more like a garden area of a park or something, mm-hmm. and he's like, all right. Here is going to be, and it was something crazy like, you know, Einstein moonwalking, thus the title.
Yeah.
And then he walked through it, and he was able to do like a list of 110 things.
Yeah, and as he's walking through it, he's placing the objects. So this is really important.
Yeah.
So once you establish your route, you want to put your objects that you want to remember, your things, your concepts that you want to remember in that room. And the reason why you want to do this is because it becomes what's called a memory peg. Okay, so that's important for step three, is you need to now peg the memory to the object. So that's when you start to think about these really bizarre associations, right? The more bizarre, the better.
Mm-hmm.
If you want to remember to pick up bananas, then you can visualize your front door as a banana daiquiri portal with Carmen Miranda greeting you or something along those lines.
It helps if you're kind of silly, I think.
Silliness, yeah. Definitely, yeah. And you can add a song or a scent to the memory, especially if you're Hannibal Lecter, right? And then step four is just to repeat the visualization until you've cemented the objects to the memories. You've really pegged those memories.
Yeah.
Right? So it's a fairly simple process. So we should probably talk about the research part of this, which is pretty cool, and actually talk about these mental athletes.
So there are many types of memory. We don't just have memory in the human brain. We have, just to give you a brief idea, we have sensory memory. We have short-term, long-term, explicit, implicit, procedural, declarative, episodic, semantic, and we also have spatial memory. And the spatial context is extremely important. Like it, because again, at a very basic level, we are navigating a world, a physical world of movable, numerous objects and symbols.
That's right, and I've talked about this before, that when you walk into a room, that 99% of what you're perceiving isn't necessarily coming through your eyes, it's coming from the associations that your brain is making spatially.
Right.
So you're, whether or not you realize it, you're judging the height of the ceiling or the doors and so on and so forth.
Yeah, I mean, and if you look back in our evolutionary history, you know, there's a time where you need to remember the field where you killed a monkey that you're going to eat or mm-hmm. something of that nature. You know, where does it lay in the field? Has it moved? So we end up having this spatial scaffolding upon which we make sense of our entire lives. Just think of a calendar or think of a timeline.
Mm-hmm.
Like these are spatial scaffolding systems that we use to understand what's going on in the world around us.
Yeah, and I especially like the evolutionary example, because why you would need this spatial memory is because, mm-hmm. Again, think about like trying to find food sources and mapping that out in your brain.
Yeah.
Or trying to figure out where that den of lions are.
Yeah.
And how best to avoid them.
Yeah, so it's really important to stress here that the memory palace is not a trick. It's not really a trick.
Mm-hmm.
It's not something. And when you have people who can use it and use it to impressive degrees, not just for five items at the grocery store, that they're not doing anything out of the ordinary. Like the spatial way, and the way that we use spatial memory in the memory palace is just how we think. It's how the brain works.
Well, and also these mental athletes that compete, right? Mm-hmm. They actually have very average memories. They've tested them.
Yeah, these are not. Yeah, super powered brains here. These are normal brains. They're using just to tie down what's happening in the brain. And there's a lot going on in the brain with memory, but spatial memory is tied to the hippocampus, which is located in the temporal lobe. And it kind of looks like a long gummy worm kind of thing in your brain. And it's also worth noting that at the head of this worm, you have the amygdala, which is tied to emotional memory, which, again, kind of looks like the head of the worm. And underneath that, you have the parahippocampal, which is tied into details, memory recoding and memory retrieval. Mm-hmm. But the hippocampus, that's spatial, and that's the area that really fires up when these mental athletes start using the memory palace to exceptional degrees.
That's right. In a study of 8 top-ranking mental athletes, they were asked to memorize 3-digit numbers, black and white photographs of people's faces, and magnified images of snowflakes. Researchers found that in comparison to the control group of non-mental athletes, the mental athletes were using a lot more of their spatial memory in that hippocampus region that you talked about. And again, it's because they're using that spatial reasoning to peg a blueprint of all the objects that they're memorizing.
Yeah.
So we're talking about these mental athletes. Let's talk specifically about one of the more famous ones, I suppose, by now, Joshua Foer.
Yeah, this is the guy who wrote Moonwalking with Einstein that I mentioned earlier. He became interested in these individuals. And
he's just a journalist, right?
Yeah, just
a
journalist.
I want to find out more about this.
Yeah. I mean, he became interested in the U.S. Memory Championship, and he went there expecting to interview a bunch of savants and just, you know, mental giants.
Mm-hmm.
And they kind of laughed at the notion when he asked them the questions, because they were like, no, I'm just, you know, a normal dude, and this is not that complicated. And so he kind of took it on as a challenge to, like, well, let me see what I can do. Let me try out the memory palace. Let me see what I can do with the method of Loki.
Yeah, and he spent a whole year, this was just pretty incredible, with memory champ Ed Cook, literally just so he could improve his mental acuity, right?
Yeah.
That was the first thing that he wanted to try to do. But he became really obsessed with becoming a mental athlete himself, and he went on to compete in and win the U.S. Memory Championship.
Yeah.
And each morning during this year, he would spend 15 minutes memorizing a new poem or memorizing the names in an old yearbook, for instance. But that's not where it stopped. I mean, he was obsessed with this. So on the subway, he would start to memorize random numbers, or he would keep a deck of playing cards with him and memorize those. And he began to catalog everything in his existence, and constructing, like, basically like condominiums of mental palaces,
yeah,
so to speak.
Cook, the guy that he interviewed,
mm-hmm.
He actually did a TED talk or a TEDx talk or something,
mm-hmm.
And I'll have to embed that in the blog post that we do to accompany this particular episode, because he goes into how he uses the memory palace system. He's memorized things like Chinese characters, basically learning bits of another language via the memory palace.
Yeah, and he has some really good visual representations,
yeah,
in that video.
Really silly ones.
Yeah, super silly. Joshua Foer, yeah, completely obsessed. He even bought a pair of goggles and spray painted them black, and then he cut out eye holes in them. And this is all in an effort so that he could better concentrate on his memory skills.
Yeah. So it looks like that part of it sounds like, you know, Jedi master training, where
yeah,
you're like wearing some sort of, you know, Far Eastern like thing, but then in his mind he's thinking about goofy things like Katharine Hepburn juggling frogs or something. I don't know.
Yeah.
Hey girlfriends, it's me, Carol Fisher. I'm so excited to tell you about the brand new series of The Girlfriends. In season 1, we told you about the murder of Gail Katz at the hands of my ex-boyfriend Bob. At one point, a woman's torso washed up on Staten Island and was misidentified as Gail. She spent 9 years in Gail's grave, and then she just disappeared.
It's almost like it's become this moral obligation to find her.
And that's what we're going to do. Find this missing girlfriend and tell her story. With the help of some of your favorite girlfriends from season 1, like my producer, Anna.
Oh my God.
My friend, Dr. Mindy Shapiro.
Hi, it's Dr. Shapiro, and I'd like to speak with the deputy medical examiner.
And of course, Gail's sister, Elaine Katz.
Having no closure, it kills you.
Join us as we try to solve a 35-year-old cold case. It's not going to be easy, but it's going to be one hell of a ride.
What?
I can't believe this.
Listen to season 2 of The Girlfriends, Our Lost Sister, on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Bring a little optimism into your life with The Bright Side, a new kind of daily podcast from Hello Sunshine, hosted by me, Danielle Robay,
and me, Simone Boyce. Every weekday, we're bringing you conversations about culture, the latest trends, inspiration, and so much more.
Thank you for taking the light, and you're going to shine it all over the world, and it makes me really happy.
I never imagined that I would get the chance to carry this honor and help be a part of this legacy.
Listen to The Bright Side on America's number one podcast network, iHeart. Open your free iHeart app and search The Bright Side.
Hey there, I'm Dr. Maya Shunker, and I'm a scientist who studies human behavior. Many of us have experienced a moment in our lives that changes everything. A moment that instantly divides our life into a before and an after. On my podcast, A Slight Change of Plans, I talk to people about navigating these very moments.
The last couple of years has been the hardest season of our marriage for sure. I'm surprised our marriage survived it. I think we both are. I think we both were barely holding on. Nothing compares to how hard this is.
Their stories are full of candor, awe, and hard-won wisdom. And you'll hear from scientists who teach us how we can be more resilient in the face of change.
True behavior change is really identity change. Every action you take is a vote for the type of person you wish to become.
Listen to A Slight Change of Plans on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Summon your anticipation for an all-new season of our favorite Netflix series, Bridgerton. And with it, a new season of Bridgerton, the official podcast. I'm your host, Gabby Collins, and this season, we are bringing fans even deeper into the ton. Colin Bridgerton has returned from his travels abroad. Is betrothal written in the stars for the eligible bachelor? And meanwhile, the ton is reverberating with speculation of who holds Lady Whistledown's pen. We're discussing it all. And I sit down with Nicola Coughlan, Luke Newton, Shonda Rhimes, and more to offer an exclusive peek behind the scenes of each episode of the new season. Watch season 3 of the Shondaland series on Netflix May 16th. Then fall in love all over again by listening to Bridgerton, the official podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts. New episodes drop starting May 2nd.
And there's a great New York Times article called Secrets of a Mind Gamer. And in it, Cook says to the reporter there that photographic memory, because the reporter brings up, well, isn't this just photographic memory?
Yeah, and no, not at all.
Yeah, and he says, no, photographic memory is a despicable myth. It doesn't exist. In fact, my memory is quite average. All of us here have quite average memories. Okay, so this is coming from the guy who could recite most of Paradise Lost by heart, as well as like 252 random digits he could commit to memory in like 5 minutes.
Yeah.
So, I mean, these really are incredible feats that these guys are doing.
Yeah, indeed.
And actually, you know, this is a competition that they have among themselves, but Cook says that it's also an attempt for them to rescue a long-lost tradition of memory training. Because, again, we don't necessarily need it these days, right?
Mm-hmm.
Except that we still have these crazy failing memories, right?
Yeah.
Just for the most mundane things. Like I mentioned to you that I think a lot, for some reason, about Quentin Tarantino movies, but inevitably I always forget his name. And yet it's something that, you know, I reference a lot.
Well, how are you going to remember it? How would you use the memory palace to remember
his
name?
Okay, the reason why I can even say Quentin Tarantino now is because now I think about going to San Quentin and going to the commissary. And in the commissary, Mario Batali is fixing 10,000 plates of Tarantino pasta.
We'll see that. Well, see, and that makes perfect sense within the architecture of your mind. But I would have to use Quentin Tarantino to remember that other stuff you were talking about. I mean, Sam Quentin, I know, but who is the guy?
Mario Batali?
Who's that?
Oh, man, he's this great Italian chef. And
okay.
And you don't have to...
Oh, is he the redheaded dude?
Yeah.
Okay.
He's pretty outrageous in and of himself. You don't really have to do much to him. Like, you know, you don't want to gild the lily there.
Okay.
Yeah. But, yeah, anyway, I mean, this is stuff that you can do. But it's pretty amazing to look at this Joshua Foer character and Ed Cook and see them in action. And... in that video that Ed Cook has on the TEDx, he says that you should use your memory in a playful and enjoyable way, and you should experience it as a gift rather than a boring and annoying thing you'd rather park away in your iPhone.
Yeah, because that's the thing. They're enjoying these memory games. And I have to say, learning that little list was kind of fun. So the five, measly five things I had to remember at the grocery store. But I don't know, maybe I should play with it more and see how it goes. And I certainly encourage anyone listening to give the Memory Palace a go, to try using it, even if it's just like, you know, the next time you need to do a grocery list of just a few items.
Yeah.
Don't write it down. Don't put it in your cell phone. Try constructing a memory palace out of it. And I think you'll be surprised at how well it works. All right, we're back, and we're going to speak with Nelson Delis here. Again, a three-time USA memory champion. He's currently ranked one of the top 50 in the world memory rankings. And he started competing in 2009 when he came in 16th in the USA Memory Championships that year. And in the year since, he's won three times and finished in the top three spots. He runs the Extreme Memory Tournament, extrememorytournament.com is where you'll find it. And he also has a nonprofit titled Climb for Memory. And you'll find that at climbformemory.org. That's a nonprofit charity aimed at raising awareness and funds for Alzheimer's disease by climbing mountains around the world. So welcome to the show, Nelson. I'm going to start off by just asking, what does competing in the U.S. Memory Championships consist of?
Yeah, so it's actually it's a one-day event, and basically there's a morning and an afternoon part. And the morning part is based off of four events. So we memorize faces. We have a packet of 117 pictures, and we have 15 minutes to memorize as many of those faces with their name pairs as possible. And then after that, we have speed numbers. So we're given a page filled with numbers, and we have 5 minutes to memorize as many as possible. Then we do a deck of cards as fast as possible. And then finally a poem, a previously unpublished poem that we try to memorize word for word in 15 minutes. The top eight from that morning event, set of events goes into the afternoon rounds, which is like a playoff series of rounds. The first is a random word list. We have to memorize in 15 minutes as many words as possible. And we go on stage and are eliminated if you say any wrong. And then when three are eliminated, we move on to the next round, which is a tea party. That's what it's called. We get audience members to come up and say things about themselves, like their name, where they're from, phone number, hobbies. And we have to memorize those. And then finally, the final event is to memorize two decks of cards in 5 minutes. And it's basically set on stage until somebody messes up and you're left with the champion.
So what's your method? Do you use the method of loci?
Right. No, everyone that you'll find in these competitions will use some form of the memory palace technique or the method of loci. And that's what separates us all pretty much, in my opinion, is basically practice. How much time did you spend training? Because you get faster at being able to use this method and more efficient at it.
And can you share anything on your particular take on the method, or is that sort of a trade secret?
No, I can. It's funny, in this world of mnemonics, competitive mnemonics, you'll see everybody's willing to share their techniques because there are no secrets. It just comes down to how much do you train. So in terms of what I do, it's nothing crazy. I mean, I use memory palaces from my childhood, my homes that I've lived in, apartments, workplaces, things like that. And what it comes down to is, like I said, practice, but also for some of the events, it's big on strategy. So for example, numbers, I have a specific system that I've come up with to help me translate these numbers into things that I can place in the memory palace. And that, I guess, is kind of where some people may have an advantage over others. But that, again, takes time. If you have the more complicated your system, the more time you need to spend preparing it and practicing it.
Do you find yourself using the memory palace for things outside of competitions, like when you're not in the game? And how much of it do you use in the course of any given day?
You know, at the beginning when I was getting into this, I would try to memorize everything, people I meet, things I see, whatever. But the more I got into memory sports and the more I would practice, the more I'd just be exhausted by the time it was, you know, real life. So actually, a lot of the time nowadays I'm just kind of like, I don't want to be on all the time. So I kind of shut it off, which is interesting in itself, because it shows that this thing is, it's something I have to do with, make an effort to do. It's not just a natural, thing that happens, you know? But that being said, I mean, I do use it obviously, if I need to. If I'm at a party or an important networking event, I use it obviously to memorize names and facts about people.
How has the method of loci changed the way you look at memory as a whole, particularly the degree to which we can trust it?
Yeah, you know, learning these techniques has definitely given me a lot more confidence in my own memory. It's allowed me to do things that I never thought I'd be able to do. And it just shows me that the mind is really, I don't want to say limitless, because that's a bit silly to say that, but there are a lot of things that we can do with our minds that we may not believe is possible, you know? And that to me is just the beauty of this whole thing, is that there's so much more than we know. And, you know, we should give ourselves a lot more credit sometimes. We're too quick to say, oh, I can't do that. That's impossible. But, you know, there are a lot of things that are possible, and it's just a matter of thought, you know?
So who's harder on you when you actually forget something, yourself or other people?
At this point, probably people that I know. You know, everybody expects me to remember everything. And while I do remember a lot, like I said, I do like to kind of take time off from being on all the time, you know? So, and you know, you can imagine everybody who meets me expects me to remember their name, and that's a lot of people. Of course, they remember my name because I'm Nelson, the memory guy, right? They come towards me. So, yeah, I guess now it's more other people.
Is there any sort of information that's particularly difficult to incorporate into the memory palace in your experience?
Yeah, I guess names are pretty tricky, because you're not really using a memory palace per se. You kind of are, but it's in disguise, if that makes any sense. You know, instead of attaching a piece of information, an image, to a location in a memory palace, you're attaching it to a person's face or a person's body or something about them. And the tricky part about that is you can't really review in the same way that you can with a memory palace. The memory palace, you know very well the person and their attribute or their feature that you use as an anchor. You know, it goes away with them when they're gone. So it's kind of scary in that sense, because you don't have control over that.
Here's a question. Does it affect your dreams?
I don't know. Not really. I'm a bad dreamer. I don't really remember my dreams, which is kind of funny, I guess. But I will say that leading up to competition, when I'm memorizing a lot, training a lot, I have had dreams where that I'm memorizing. And when I wake up, I remember like the sequence of cards that I memorized in the dream, which is bizarre.
Now, I know what a lot of people are wondering. Can anyone become a memory athlete, or do you have to have a certain type of cognitive architecture already in place?
No, anybody can join. There's no like qualifications or anything. And the techniques are pretty easy to learn, but obviously if you want to compete at the high level, a lot of prep needs to go into it.
Can you walk us through an example of the sort of memory palace you might employ to remember, say, something like a series of playing cards?
Yeah, you could, let's see. So I had to do a speech today, and I can maybe recite off some of the images I saw today. Okay. All right. So the first three cards were, Eight of Clubs, Queen of Hearts, and Five of Spades, which is, Bear Grylls, you know, the adventurer guy. Cooking a pair of scissors, and then moving on to the next location was the Ten of Hearts, Two of Clubs, and Ten of Clubs, which is a close friend of mine being crucified on the floor. And then you have Jennifer Connelly standing on top of a television set while playing her Game Boy. And then I have Satan waving his wand, and suddenly he's wearing gloves. I have an ex-girlfriend sniping with a golf club. Then there's a pirate, Jack Sparrow. He's dunking, slam dunking a desk. And then Arnold Schwarzenegger was moonwalking on top of a horse. And so on.
All right, so there you have it. Some insight from an expert utilizer of the Memory Palace. Thank you, Nelson, for taking the time to chat with us. If you want to follow Nelson on Twitter, you can find him at Climb4Memory. And again, be sure to visit his website, climbformemory.org. That's the nonprofit charity aimed at raising awareness and funds for Alzheimer's disease. As always, you can find this and any number of other podcast episodes of Stuff to Blow Your Mind at stufftoblowyourmind.com, as well as blog posts, videos, links out to our various social media accounts, you name it.
And if you have thoughts about the Memory Palace or you want to tell us about a particularly bizarre Memory Palace you've ever constructed, you can email us at blowthemind@howstuffworks.com.
For more on this and thousands of other topics, visit howstuffworks.com.
Today's episode is brought to you by Visible. The future of wireless is here, and it's transparent. Switch to Visible, the wireless company that makes wireless visible. Get a one-line plan with unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon, just $25 a month, every month, taxes and fees included. No hidden fees, no surprises, no, really.
What are you waiting for? Get with the times and switch to Visible at Visible.com. Monthly rate on the Visible plan for data management practices and additional terms, visit Visible.com.
Hey, girlfriends, it's me, Carol Fisher, back with another season of the global number one podcast, The Girlfriends. Last time, we investigated the murder of Gail Katz. This time, we're uncovering the identity of the woman who was buried in Gail's grave for a decade before she disappeared. Join me and the rest of the club as we tell her story. Listen to season two of The Girlfriends, Our Lost Sister on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
The Black Effect presents Family Therapy, and I'm your host, Elia Connie. Jay is the woman in this dynamic who is currently co-parenting two young boys with her former partner, David.
David, he is a leader. He just don't want to leave me.
But how do you lead a woman? How do you lead in a relationship? Like, what's the blueprint?
David, you just asked the most important question. Listen to Family Therapy on the Black Effect Podcast Network, iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Jon Stewart is back in the host chair at The Daily Show, which means he's also back in our ears on The Daily Show Ears Edition podcast. Join late night legend Jon Stewart and the best news team for today's biggest headlines, exclusive extended interviews, and more. Now this is a second term we can all get behind. Listen to The Daily Show Ears Edition on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.